Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state announced a new single-day high COVID-19 case count yesterday. There were 121 new cases, including 82 Alaska resident cases in 15 communities. The Department of Health and Social Services reported that they included 36 in Anchorage, 10 in the Yukon-Koyukuk census area, 9 in Fairbanks, and 1 each in the Nome and Southeast Fairbanks census areas. There were also 37 new non-resident cases. 36 were American Triumph seafood processing vessel workers in Unalaska. Alaska's pandemic long case count is up to over 1,800, and the total number of non-resident cases has surpassed 400. There was a new COVID death announced over the weekend. The DHSS says the fatality was an Anchorage woman in her 50s who had pre-existing medical conditions. She's the 18th Alaskan to die from COVID-19. There were no new hospitalizations reported yesterday, and as of Saturday, the number of those hospitalized in Alaska with confirmed or suspected COVID-19 cases was 27. The Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board is holding a special meeting tonight to discuss how the new school year will start. The existing proposal is for 5-day-a-week in-person learning at elementary schools and for an alternating 2- and 3-day-a-week in-person learning schedule at middle and high schools. But the recent increase in COVID-19 cases is raising questions about sending students and teachers back into classrooms. The only other item on tonight's special school board meeting agenda is the school calendar, including whether classes will begin on August 19th or the 20th. The special school board meeting is at 6 p.m. Citing COVID-19 concerns, the Great Northwest Athletic Conference has suspended fall collegiate sports competitions. According to a conference release, its board met Friday and unanimously approved the decision, which means there will be no GNAC intercollegiate athletics competitions through November 30th. The board plans to make a decision by October 15th about competitions scheduled for after November 30th. A University of Alaska release says the GNAC suspension affects the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Anchorage cross-country running and volleyball teams, plus UAF basketball. UAF Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Athletics Keith Champagne clarifies that the suspension is not a cancellation and that it's possible fall season competitions could be shifted to the spring. The release says a decision on winter sports is expected in the early fall. Nenana leaders are celebrating completion of an $18 million bridge that will open up hundreds of thousands of acres west of town to year-round access and potential development. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Mayor Josh Verhagen says completion of the Nenana-Tochacket Bridge marks the culmination of decades of efforts to provide overland access to the areas west of the Nenana River known as the Tochacket. He says it'll provide the opportunity that both local leaders and area residents have been waiting for.
Each of them have been wanting land access for quite a while. The city included, the city owns some land over there.
And so does the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the state of Alaska, especially the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Other landowners include the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the Tagatili Corporation, the local native corporation. Verhagen says the bridge also will help the private sector develop resources in the Tochacket, like Doyon, the regional native corporation, which for years has been exploring the area for oil and gas.
The gas and oil exploration is a huge potential. I think that not having year-round access has definitely slowed the exploration down.
The mayor says the bridge also will allow development of other industries, including agriculture. Advocates say the Tochacket has better soils and growing conditions than the interior's main agricultural area to the east around Delta Junction.
The ag land, the state ag land, will be up for sale in 2022.
Local officials say all that development will help revive the area's economy and provide residents with access to resources like timber and more hunting and fishing opportunities. That's been the hope ever since the project was first formally proposed 4 decades ago by, among others, then Mayor Jack Coghill, who went on to serve as a state senator and lieutenant governor. He died last year at the age of 93.
He definitely played a big role in sharing the vision and getting the ball rolling.
In 2008, construction began on a road to the Nenana River and a bridge across a nearby slough. But 7 years and $9 million later, the project ground to a halt at the riverbank. Pilings had been sunk into the riverbed, but the city had run out of money to build the bridge and the state had stopped funding the project. Finally, 2 years ago, the local Native Association stepped up to help finish it.
We were just really trying to figure out how to make it happen. still because it had stalled.
Nenana Native Association Administrator Jessica Shaw was serving as Nenana's interim mayor in 2018, helping the city work out its financial problems. Shaw says she knew the Native Association stood a better chance of getting funding for the bridge, so she got permission from the tribal council to apply for a $9 million federal grant.
We formed a team and went after the grant, and to our surprise, we were awarded it.
The Native Association administered the grant and oversaw construction of the 450-foot bridge, which was completed last month. It was opened to the public after a July 6th ribbon-cutting ceremony. Shaw says the tribal council members agreed to seek the grant in hopes it would help both the Native and non-Native members of the community thrive.
The hope is that with future responsible development and management, that there will be jobs for locals. You know, our people here.
Shaw says a healthy local economy will provide the added benefit of helping members of the local Native community preserve their culture. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
An ordinance that prohibits discrimination against LGBTQ individuals in Ketchikan city limits was passed last week. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the local law was approved by the city council over the objections of religious advocates.
Ketchikan's new protections for LGBTQ individuals, unanimously approved by the city council, are wide-ranging. Though the U.S. Supreme Court ruled earlier this summer that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression in employment, the ruling's impact in other settings isn't settled. Ketchikan's ordinance also bans discrimination against LGBTQ individuals in housing and in public businesses. The proposal followed a high-profile demonstration outside Heavenly Creations, that's a Ketchikan flower shop, after the owner reportedly refused to take an order for a same-sex wedding. Heavenly Creations owner Heather Dalen spoke publicly about the matter for the first time at the council's meeting.
I have personally made and delivered bouquets to the members of LGBTQ community on numerous occasions. We have not and do not discriminate.
She argued that the ordinance's provisions requiring private businesses to serve customers regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity violate her own right to exercise her religious beliefs.
For you to pass an unnecessary ordinance to try and force myself to participate in a ceremony that violates not only God's holy truth, but also strips me of my rights as an American, taxpaying, law-abiding citizen is unreasonable.
Though the ordinance does provide carve-outs for religious organizations and members-only clubs, businesses that serve the general public, like Heavenly Creations, would be prohibited from refusing business because of a customer's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Dalen's argument gets at the core of a question on which the U.S. Supreme Court has so far declined to rule, whether a business can be compelled by civil rights laws to provide a service that violates the owner's religious or moral beliefs. Museum curator Ryan McHale testified at the council's first meeting on the issue in June. He returned to argue that religion had long justified all kinds of discrimination.
Much like their pro-slavery predecessors, segregationists during the Jim Crow era cited scripture as justification for maintaining racial segregation and inequality.
Some members of Ketchikan City Council expressed hesitation at the body's July 2nd meeting, but the final vote was unanimous, all seven members in favor. With passage of the ordinance, Ketchikan joins Sitka, Juneau, and Anchorage on the list of cities that bar discrimination against LGBTQ individuals. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
And I'm Dan Bross.